Good evening, gentlemen. I was going to say ladies and gentlemen, but I think I'll only just be kidding us. My name's Aaron Finnan, and I'm going to be talking to you about Moxie Marlon's Spike Snow prefix attack when used in defeating SSL. Ever since I first kind of heard about this attack, I've been particularly fascinated by it. I was also very lucky enough to interview this security researcher who did this attack. The talk should outline, and you should hope by the end to know these following things: what a null prefix attack is and how it's used in defeating SSL, what are SSL implementations, what is an online domain validation, what is a universal wildcard cert, and how we defeat OCSP. So, a short introduction. My name, as I said earlier on, is Aaron Finnan. I'm an ethical hacker, a security podcaster. I interviewed, as I said, the researcher of this attack. I want to talk to you about this attack because it's mind-blowingly simple, and just the knock-on effects are massive. It's an implementation vulnerability in a secure protocol. I think every ethical hacker in the room will be going, wow, it's really nice to see one of those. And there's a lot of content available online if you want to find out more information. So tonight's aim is just basically to be a crash course in this particular attack and the vulnerability that it exploits. It's only supposed to whet your appetite. I will give you a couple of web addresses and some suggestions at the end if you want to find out more information. It's going to be a little bit of a tight squeeze to get it all into 10 minutes, but I should just about do it. So if I could ask, if you have any questions, if you could just keep them towards the end for me, and that will give me a chance to get through this. So in short, tonight's talk is focusing on the implementation vulnerability in the secure protocol, SSL TLS, which was left unpatched in some operating systems for well over 10 weeks. At its heart, the null prefix attack enables an attacker to read usernames and passwords over otherwise encrypted web traffic, such as eBay, Facebook, PayPal, you name it, without the user or the owner of those sites ever knowing. This attack basically broke browsers' HTTPS padlocks. It basically enabled an attacker to conduct a man-in-the-middle attack and to steal information, which we shouldn't be able to do. You know, SSL and HTTPS, we should be able to rely on. However, it's not just broken in browsers. It's broken in a vast array of different programs and lots of SSL TLS implementations are vulnerable to this particular attack. Although this has been predominantly patched, it's not my job to imply to you that there isn't a real-world threat from it. It will get smaller as time goes by. The reason that I say this is, if we take in October 2009, nearly 2% of Firefox users were running a vulnerable version of Firefox, which may not sound so much, but when you look at Firefox's 47% market share for that same month, that number starts to become bigger. Also, when you look at Microsoft, for half of that month, all of Microsoft's product range was vulnerable to this attack as well. So it gives you a rough idea that this is only just starting to get fixed. So, in laying the groundwork, I want to just very quickly touch on what TLS is and its predecessor, SSL, and where it's in common use today. However, it's not my aim for this to be a definitive guide. If you decide that you want to find out more information about SSL, TLS, there's plenty of content available on the internet. But long story short, TLS, Transport Layer Security, and Secure Socket Layer, or SSL, are cryptographical protocols whose aim is to provide security for communication over networks such as the internet. The protocols are in widespread use in applications such as web browsers, email, instant messaging, VoIP, and some virtual private networks. TLS is based on the earlier SSL specifications from Netscape Corp. TLS allows a client-server program to communicate over networks in a method that makes eavesdropping, data tampering, and message forgery very hard to accomplish. In a typical deployment such as a web browser, TLS authentication is what's known as unilateral, which is that the server is authenticated, but the client client isn't. So the server, you know, the client knows the server, but the server doesn't know the client. So a simple TLS handshake would, where the server is authenticated by certificate, would look as follows. We'll start off with a negotiation phase. With a client, where the client would send a client hello. In this message, the client would inform the server of the TLS protocol versions it supports. It would give it a random number and a list of preferred cipher suites and compression methods. The server then responds with a server hello message. And within that message, it will choose the TLS version. It will also supply a random number, and it will also say which cipher suite and compression method that they'll go on with. The server then sends a certificate followed by a server hello done, indicating that the negotiation phase of the handshake is over with. The client then responds with a client key exchange message, which contains a pre-master secret and a public key. Both the client and the server use the random numbers generated from the negotiation phase and the pre-master secret to compute a common master secret. Key data for the connections will be derived from the master secret and the random numbers generated, which have been passed through carefully designed pseudo-random functions. The client then will send a change of cipher spec record informing the server that the communications will be authenticated. The client will then follow this up with an authenticated encrypted finish message, which contains the hash of the previous handshake message. If the server fails to verify that hash, then the handshake will be considered failed and the connection will be torn down. The server will follow this up by sending its own change of cipher specs to the client, informing the client that everything it now passes will be authenticated and encrypted, and the finished message will also be encrypted and hashed, and the client needs to verify it. I know it sounds pretty complicated, but it's not really. It's just a basic handshake. The certificates that are in general use in this process are a type of certificate called the X509 type. I'm not expecting anyone just to go, oh, I know what that is. But it's a pretty predominant standard used in certificates. In fact, the X509 is also known as a public key infrastructure, or PKI for short. And it also has standard formats for public key certificates and certificate revocation lists. The X509 was initially issued out on July the 3rd, 1988, and was associated with the X509 standard, and it assumed a strict hierarchy systems so that it was able, this directory tree could be built where we were able to see, all the bits of the certificate had a meaning, and we could find out where they came from, and so on and so forth. It didn't work out. It's a long story short there. However, in our case, in web server and communicating from client to server, what's actually only ever really checked in an X509 certificate is the common name in a subject field. I'll talk about that very shortly. However, browsers such as Internet Explorer, Netscape, Opera, Safari come with root certificates pre-installed. So in essence, it's really developers that are choosing who root CAs of your standard browser trusts and verifies. As I said earlier on, X509 holds this certificate revocation list standard. In the same breath, the ITF have an approved way of checking if a certificate's valid online using the Online Certificate Status Protocol, OCSP. Firefox 3 comes with that by default. defeating OCSP is a very important part of this attack. I will talk about it, but not just right now. If we look at an X509 structure for a certificate, it's very bland, to be honest with you, nothing very exciting. It has lots of information in there that you would be interested in. But as far as the web browser is interested in, they're only interested in the information in the subject. And more to the point, the common name field within that subject. Oops, that doesn't look good. We're back. Now, for an SSL TLS protocol, it's the common name field and subject field that's verified. And it's especially when proving the identity of a particular server. So if eBay were to get a certificate, they would list in the common name field www.ebay.com. If PayPal were to do the same, they would list www.paypal.com. And if I was to do the same, www.finix.co.uk. When we request a certificate, when we do a certificate signing request to a certificate authority, which will be I'll refer to as a CA throughout this, the request is validated by establishing the proof of owner of the actual domain. And this can be as simple as checking the Whois database for the root domain, checking the technical email address, and emailing them to say, have you requested to get a certificate signed? Only the root domain is checked in this process. Nothing else is checked. So we could have whatever we want as that subdomain. I mean, www. is essentially a subdomain. We can have whatever we want in there. We could have foobar.finix.co.uk. We could have certificateauthoritiesoc.finix.co.uk. We could even have this subdomain doesn't exist.co.uk. But the bottom line is the root domain is the only thing that's being checked. No one's being offended. No one's seeing that end part. And it's at that point that really this attack starts to take place. So I'm sorry I've bored you with all the technical side of it, but it was just important for me to get that out of the way. The X509 certificates are formatted in what's known as ACN1 notation, which supports lots of different string types. However, all of them are represented in some variation of Pascal when they're in memory. Pascal represents strings by a series of bytes specifying the length of the string and the string data, one character per byte. It's very, very important to pay attention to that particular point that I'm saying there, because that's very, very different to how C reads strings. C has basically one character per byte until it comes to a null character, and then the string is terminated. It's important also to remember that a null character means absolutely nothing in Pascal. It has no special meaning whatsoever at all. So in essence, what we could do is we could register an X509 certificate from a certificate authority for www.paypal.com/0.finix.co.uk. The null character has absolutely no meaning. The CA only checks the root domain. Well, we own the root domain, that's finix.co.uk. If they send me a request, I am the owner of that domain. As I've discussed earlier and I've pointed earlier on there, the root is the only important part, and this is how this attack works. However, most modern SSL TLS implementations will view data from X509 certificates as ordinary C strings. And anyone who's a fan of programming will start to see where I'm going with this. So it uses standard functions to seeing it, to comparing it, to manipulating it. One of the consequences of that is that we take our issued CA cert that we got from VeriSign or whoever for the X509 certificate that says www.paypal.com null character.finix.co.uk. Can anyone guess what the browser sees? The browser sees it as the browser terminates it. It sees a C string and it terminates at paypal.com. So all the tests that it uses to verify that it is in fact seeing a certificate from a site that it's being told it's being seen has been beat. We've defeated it. It really is as simple as that. If we set up a man-in-the-middle attack, we can present that certificate. Say we get a certificate for PayPal, we can set up a man-in-the-middle attack on a LAN and sniff all data that's going to paypal.com without any worries. And it's true to say that the authenticity of SSL TLS has been defeated here. However, the story really doesn't end here. As I mentioned previously, we have the Online Certificate Status Protocol, or OCSP, as I will now be calling it, because it's a bit of a mouthful. It's a pretty effective way of defeating us. And how OCSP was designed, it was designed to be this lightweight protocol that when it sees a certificate for the first time or it hasn't seen it recently, it will contact the CA to say, is this certificate with this serial number valid? Which means it wouldn't take long for certificate authorities to defeat our null prefix. So it's a bit of a problem. We need to watch out for this. However, lucky enough, the researcher of this attack, Moxie, defeated OCSP with less effort than he did to defeat the null prefix. As I said earlier on, it's a lightweight protocol. The idea is it's real-time certificate revocation. The old way of doing it was pretty bad. It's on by default, and this should kill the null prefix attack. However, Moxie, after studying the response codes, had noticed that the response code 3, try later, didn't generate any negative indicators at the browser level. It didn't stop what it was doing. It didn't finish anything. It just try again later. It doesn't sound like there's going to be a problem later on. It just, we're busy, come back later on. It doesn't. If you look at the other ones, successful would be nice, but we really wouldn't want to send one back that said malformed request. I think that kind of might give the game away, or certainly unauthorized as well. But after some enumeration, what he'd found out was that some of the response data, the response status, isn't signed by the authority back. It doesn't cover that. It actually only covers the optional response data. So what he found out is he could sit on a LAN. We're already doing a man-in-the-middle attack to listen for any request that has OCSP. And then what we can do is we can block that and supply our own one that says 3. It doesn't require any signatures. It doesn't mean that we have to forge anything. So the Online Certificate Status Protocol was defeated today for you by the number 3. And it literally is as simple as that. This is this lightweight protocol that was specifically designed for this particular situation. And it really, no forging, no anything. I mean, just literally the ASCII 3. And that defeats OCSP. I'm going to pick on Firefox for a little here because this is my favourite subject about this attack, and it really kind of demonstrates this as a platform. I have to say from the outset that Firefox responded, the Mozilla team responded in a fast, appropriate manner and patched this incredibly quickly. When they look at their other peers, there was only one other peer that could have done something, which was Microsoft, and I said they took about 10 weeks. But that was only when a PayPal cert was out in the wild that they got around to patching it. And when I talk about that as well, it's worth remembering that if you are not Firefox on a Windows system, you would still have been vulnerable. Opera, Safari were all vulnerable on a Windows system to this. So there is two kind of key vulnerabilities that kind of came across here. How in certificates you can request almost a wildcard cert, and it's all sort of like organizations like Google, eBay, and lots of commerce that have lots of subdomains. So rather than Google having to get an SSL cert and an X509 cert for mail and docs and so on and so forth, they have this wildcard certificate, which is a star basically, dot, whatever the domain name is going to be. Well, it turns out that NSS, which is the library used in Firefox, checked them very strangely, to say the least. And what he was able to register was a domain, a certificate for star.nullcharacter.thoughtcrime.org. And when any site that Firefox went to that required a certificate, it would say, yes, we're here. And it was termed universal wildcard set, because you would only need one certificate and you would just constantly reissue them. There's another similar attack that uses base constraints, but you have to get root CA and sign certificates on the fly. This one, you just keep on giving. It's almost better than a CA cert, a root cert, to be honest with you. Which is very interesting. And then, as I say, Firefox are very quick in patching it, and this is patched all the way through the three series of Firefox. Version 2 is not so lucky, so if you know anyone running version 2, I would break their arm to get it upgraded. Which kind of nicely leads on to this this as being the most scariest part of it all, is that this attack being used as a platform to deliver payloads. Okay, think of a piece of software on your system that contacts a server out on the internet and waits for that server to tell it to download and run an unsigned data block, or as we like to call it, Firefox auto updates. Now, bearing in mind, this is all authenticated over TLS SSL. Well, we've already cracked that. We can be any certificate that we want to be. So how about we intercept all the auto updates and we send it an update? So we could, in theory, not that I've had time to make it work, we could, in theory, find a vulnerable version of Firefox on a corporate network, update all of those machines to a non-vulnerable version of Firefox, which we would have ever so nicely put in our own root CA and embed that in the trusted list. Maybe we could bind some other nasty little toys like root and boot kits, and you know, maybe we could do something really crazy like, you know, deploy wubi.exe and really kind of get all the Windows users converted. Which I thought was a particularly interesting part of this attack. Now, I'm going to talk to you about a piece of software, because in the moment I've just talked to you all about things that can happen, but there is actually a piece of software that does all of that for you, and it's released under the GPL version 3. It's designed by a guy called Moxie Marlon Spike, who I've mentioned God knows how many times through this, but this guy's a very, very interesting guy. This is not just the first protocol level sort of vulnerability he's found. He's found quite a bit in his time. SSL Sniff has OCSP denial, Firefox auto update and hijacking, supports null prefix and wildcard certs. And it's available for you to be able to download. I played around with it. I did more than play around with it. I've spent probably God knows how many hours going, wow, this is really cool. And when I should have actually been doing slides, maybe. But some screenshots for you. As I said earlier on, I do have a virtual appliance. If you have 680 meg spare on your USB pen, you're more than happy to take it away with you and have a play with it. Really is, you run SSL Sniff with these command options. You can choose any command options. It's quite well documented. If not, if you go to like Remote Exploit Forum, they have an SSL Sniff page, funny enough. So this is me on a test account using IE6. About a week after the Black Tuesday of patches from Microsoft, when they had 13 of them. As you can see, I'm padlocked, I'm on HTTPS. In fact, if I go and check the certificate will tell me that I'm on PayPal. There is absolutely no way for the end user to be able to tell, because the mechanism that's telling them is also vulnerable to the null prefix. This is my favorite part, being told that the certificate was okay, because the next slide will make even more sense, because this is me taking the username and password. You can't see it so well, but yeah,
the login details and the password
For a certificate that I'm being told is fine. I'm not throwing up any errors, no warnings. You have to take my word for it, or you can play with the virtual machine that I've set up. So, in conclusion, I hear you all say yes. I hope that we've covered basically what the null prefix attack is, what a wildcard certificate is, how OCSP is defeated, how we can get a browser to run unsigned data blobs and have lots of fun there, and the software that can be used for it. And that's me finished. As I say, I only wanted it to be a short introduction. Is there any questions? Surely I have not answered everything so quickly. Has anyone heard about this attack before?
Can you do all this from a yellow submarine?
Can do it all from a yellow submarine. Depends if it's got virtual machines. I can do anything with a virtual machine.
Do you know much about the remote exploit in Ilint to NSS through the way that it handles the certificates?
Yeah, I don't know a lot about it, but it's a very interesting point. Someone who's obviously watched Mox's talk. Actually, how NSS verified certificates actually led them up to having a buffer, which you could just about squeeze a shellcode in. So you could present them with a certificate with basically a shellcode, and the way that, if you ever look at the checking mechanism for NSS, go and visit Moxie's site. His talk is up and about on DEF CON, but he does an excellent example of basically, you look at this line of code, it's got old declarations in it, it's big, long, and messy, and he just unfocuses the slide and says, you know, don't look at it. Now focus your eyes back in. Now you can just tell by looking at a piece of code like this that there's going to be problems. And he doesn't get halfway through it before he basically finds a buffer overflow. And which is, you know, buffer overflow via certificate. I mean, that's pretty awesome. Any other questions?
Thank you for listening to Hack Republic Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.